great to have you here. The new term has begun. We've had a break, Christmas. We had a great time. It seems a long time ago now. Anyway, it's great to see you here. And so this is the vision for this year. Join us in building community. And as we launch this thing, as we in the mornings, we're looking at the earliest letters that were written by a man called Paul. And in the evening, we're going to look at another letter of Paul. Come to that in a minute. In the morning, we're looking at the letter to the Galatians and the Thessalonians. They were the earliest letters recorded by this man Paul, this great church planter. And particularly letters to the local church. It's all about the local church, small little churches that he planted. What can we learn from the Bible as we look to build these communities? Communities that make a difference in society. Communities of teenagers, of students, of young adults, of older folks, of middle-aged folks, of all kinds of people. How can we make a difference in our society? We've got lots of communities here, but we want to multiply them by at least 50%. And we want to see at least 300 homes belonging to church members which are open to Jesus. Because they're the mission base. The home is the mission base. If you've not got a home, if you're a student, you're in a room, in a house, your room is a mission base. Your room's a mission base. Jesus is in that room. So that's what we're aiming for. And in the mornings, the local church, in the evenings, something quite different. We're looking at this. We're looking at learning from the Bible, a message for the big city church as we look at 1 Corinthians. And tonight, we're looking at church, God, and you. What can God say to us? We're a big city, Sheffield. We're the fifth biggest city in the UK. We used to be the fourth, but Leeds overtook us. We're a big city. And we're a big city church. This church has got a footprint not just in the city of Sheffield, but in the nation and the nations. Over 30 years, people have come from across the world to this little Victorian box, basically. We don't have a big auditorium. We don't have a big stage with lights and smoke machines. We just never done that. We decided not to do that. Our way of doing church has been to release communities across cities. And communities, we call them clusters, missional communities. And just God has used this place. So what can we learn afresh as we relaunch again, looking for more growth this year? That's what we're going to do between now and the summer. We're going to get into Corinthians. It's a bit edgy. We're going to do all kinds of, it's going to stretch you if you're here for the evening gathering, some really cutting edge stuff about relationships, about life, about sex, about what we do with our bodies, about all kinds of stuff. It's really cutting edge. 2,000 years ago he wrote this, but it's so right for today and for our culture. Now, three things we're going to look at briefly tonight: church, God, and you. So let's just move on to the next one, if you would. Church. Now, we're in church tonight. Church, when you think about it, it's a funny thing, isn't it, church? It's kind of like, is it just an hour on a Sunday? Or if you're really keen, an hour and a half? Really keen ones. When a few years ago, we reckoned that church attendance in the UK was about 6%, 6.3%. Most people now reckon it's about 4, if we're lucky, 3 maybe. And in this area, South Yorkshire, where we are, it's probably about 1%. All the churches, we're part of the Church of England here and Baptist denominations, probably we're less than 1% now. And that's nothing to be, we're not boasting in that, it's just the reality of the situation. So church is one of those things like, do you go to church? Yes, end of conversation for most people, unless they are becoming interested in church. I've said at times before that I had no, until I was 28, 29, no real interest in church. I became a Christian at 28, just 28 going into 29. Family never went to church. Church had no relevance in my life at all. But the second word is, so that's church. Then there's God. Does anybody believe in God today? Well, people in this room do. I would hope the vast majority of us believe in God. Reading a little article recently saying, people today believe in gods. We're back to that belief in multiple gods, whatever fits your lifestyle. Pope Benedict said not too long ago that the Western culture is now definitely secular. That's from the Pope. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, said back in 2016, this. He said that more than secular, the UK culture is fast becoming anti-Christian. And you may experience that in your own life. If you're a Christian, we're cautious now what we say about God and how we talk about God. It's just interesting. Just give me a show of hands if you're between the ages of 17 and 25. Just put your hands in the air, would you? Okay. 17, 25. There's people lying down there, but never mind. Keep your hands in the air, please. Look around. It's lots. Okay, put your hands down. Recent surveys have shown, I was looking at these up in the week and just confirming again today, that over 80% of 17 to 30-year-olds have no meaningful contact with the church in this country. And actually, a survey done very recently for a report given by the Church of England showed this, that 0.5% of 18 to 25-year-olds attend a church. That's half of a person in every 100. If you see that half a person, steer away from them. They'll look weird. Which half is it, the top half or the bottom half? Let's move on. Half a person, 0.5%. Now, we know that's right because you've got friends who probably don't go to church and actually don't believe in God. Those statistics are really quite challenging. In the Church of England, again, another recent survey. It's important we do these surveys, not to show how bad we are, but to show where we are so we can turn back to God and ask Him to renew us and revive us again in the church. But a recent survey in the Church of England has shown this, that 25% of all Church of England churches in this nation have no children in them at all. That's 0 to 11-year-olds. And if you take all the churches as an average, the average amount of children in the Church of England church is 9. 9 0 to 11-year-olds. Now, we're very fortunate. We've got lots and lots of kids. But, you know, I wonder what Robert Raikes would think, who started the Sunday school movement with such commitment and such sacrifice. And next Sunday evening, you've got a great friend of mine, a great friend of this church, Andy Hawthorne, will be on the platform from Manchester, from The Message. Hold on to your hats. Great speaker. And he came from a background of Salvation Army. And Andy's testimony is one of the Sunday school movement was so important, he believed, back in an age when the Christian faith had been lost in our nation and started to come back in again through great pioneers like Raikes and others. You may not have heard these guys, but these were the people, you know, a couple hundred years ago, started to bring Christianity back into our nation. And that's where we are again now. And you're going to hear one on next Sunday evening. He is a revival speaker. He is a prophet in our time, Andy Hawthorne. Amazing work this man's done. Don't miss it. This guy travels the world. He loves this church, and he loves coming here. We get him once a year, maybe twice if we're fortunate, so come and listen to him. So the God and the church. Now, the issue is many people equate the church with God and God with the church. It's a kind of an equal sign, which is very dangerous to do. And so before I became a Christian, if I ever saw a church, overgrown churchyard and nobody in it, if I ever thought about God, God was that church, that dead, half-dead building. And so they equate the church with God. And then the third person in the mix, or group of people in the mix, is you. There you are, just appearing in the bottom corner as a kind of afterthought. There you go. It's hard being you, isn't it? Do you think? It's hard being sometimes life's difficult, you know, trying to hold a job down, trying to find a job, trying to get through school in a reasonable way, trying to get through uni. trying to get a first. But trying to get through life. There's so much to think about, so many people to connect with. How do you make sense of it? Your future, the pressures on you. You know, when you're young, in those moments you kind of think, blimey, what's going to happen when I'm really old, when I'm, I don't know, 45? What's my life going to be? Am I going to have a job, and have I got any security? And it's difficult. And so what we do is we tend to distance ourselves from those big questions. Another survey, I do this all the time. This was very interesting a few years ago, this one. I looked in my notes on this. Fantastic survey. It's this survey questioned, again, 18 to 25-year-olds. And they found that in this survey, what do you do? What's the thing you look forward to most? 50%, this was across in the UK, 50% said this: Friday nights is the best night. I go into the city and get drunk. Half of the people who said that also admitted they had no plans at all for how they were going to get home. Now, some of you may be sat there thinking, well, that's me. I don't know. Isn't that interesting? Trish and I, when we go kind of out and about and often in supermarkets or whatever, I often talk to people who are in service industry. Nobody ever talks to people on checkouts. I love talking to people on checkouts. Things like, hi, how's it going? Okay. Have you got long to go? When's your shift finish? 2 hours, can't wait. Or an hour or something like that. Or I've just come on, I've got 6 hours to go. Never mind, I'll pray for you now. So, you know, how's it going? Just talking to them. And when they're near the end, I was talking to a guy recently, I'll not say the supermarket, and I said to him, so how long have you got to go? He said, I'm in my last 40 minutes. And not long now. I said, oh, what after that? He said, I'm off tomorrow. Tonight, I'm off out. I'm going to get drunk. Get paid. I'm going to get drunk. Now, that's not, Trish's, we're often commenting on this, that is not a one-off comment. That happens quite on a reasonably regular basis, particularly with people who are in mundane, seemingly, jobs. Kind of the thing is to go and get drunk, and then, you know, it's like a highlight. And it's because there's a void in there somewhere about a reality of what life is about. And it's because often the church has not stood up and proclaimed a message of hope that comes from God. So, let's take it on a step further. Let's go back and see what the Bible says. So if we're looking at a message for the big city church, it's this church in Corinth. Just move on. A little background. Corinth is in Greece. Anybody ever been to Corinth? Anybody ever been? It's not a kind of holiday place. It's a port. It used to be a very famous port, not so much now, but Corinth was famous because it was a crossroads for commerce and politics. And it was an interesting city because it had two ports, one on the east side, one on the west. The one on the west faced Italy and Europe and got all the trade. The one on the east faced Egypt and Asia Minor and got all the trade there. But between was this piece of land. It's called the Diolkos, and it was a paved roadway between one port and the other. So when ships came in from the west, from Rome, they would get there, and the little ships, they would drag up and pull across this paved roadway on rollers and then plonk it in the water on the eastern bay, and off it'd go on its way. And the same going the other way. Big ships would unload, put them on wagons, and take all the stuff to the other side. It was this, like, creative, lots of initiative. It was an amazing place, Corinth. And this church was planted there. Now, Corinth was amazing for lots of things. This is why the church was planted there for a particular reason. There were 12 temples in Corinth to the other gods. Remember what I said earlier? People don't believe in God today, but they believe in gods. And that was a statement in one of the newspapers. People today believe in gods. And I'm thinking that's no different to the church in Corinth. 12 temples to 12 separate gods. One of the biggest temples was the one to Aphrodite. You may have heard of that name. The goddess of love. And in that temple, they employed 1,000 prostitutes. And so he went to the temple, paid him money, had sex, went home. That's a showstopper, that one, isn't it? What a conversation stopper. That's what happened. It was so hedonistic, so much immorality, yet so creative and so cutting edge with politics and commerce. And in the midst of that, God said, I want to start my people. I want to start a church. So that's Corinth, and that's where it was, just bringing up here. And then why Paul wrote this letter to them. So he'd started, just bringing up, Jack, he wrote it because the little church he planted, and let's get this clear, it wasn't a mega church. Mega churches are such a modern thing. There's 1,000 people in this church. It's you know, and in the States, they're much bigger churches. But actually, it was a very small church. It started with a group of people in a home. And even at its height, the church in Corinth was maybe 80, 90 people. It was like a couple of big clusters together. But they'd lost their way. They got drawn away to the ways of the world. They'd lost this faith. And so Paul writes to them to say, whoa, 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 whoa. What's all this other God stuff? Why are you getting drawn off into the culture? You were rock solid. What's happened? And so he wrote to them to bring them back into line with the faith that they believed in, the Jesus that they first committed to. And he did that by correct teaching. And that's what we're going to look at between now and the summer. The teaching to the church, particularly a young church in a big city, that keeps their faith alive and rock solid in a culture which wants to draw you away. This is such an exciting letter. So let's see what this... So that's for STC. That's what God's going to speak to us about, I believe, over the next week. So let's look at what this passage says. So this is the passage for tonight. It's 1 Corinthians 1, and it's the first 9 verses. You can find it in the Bibles, but it's going to be on the screen here. So let's see what it says. This is from the Message translation. I, Paul, have been called and sent by Jesus, the Messiah, according to God's plan, along with my friend Sosthenes. I send this letter to you in God's church at Corinth. The word in the original there, God's church, is the word ecclesia. We get the word English word ecclesiastical from it, all things kind of churchy. And the word actually means the called out people. This is so important for us to understand, because when you're a church, you're called out. That's what the word means, ecclesia, the called out people. You are called out from this life, not with God, not with Jesus. He calls you out into another life with Jesus at the center of your life. And so that's why he said in another letter, we are in the world, but not of the world. And so it's like you're in a group of people, mates, friends, whatever it is, and you're still friends, they're still your mates. But when you're a Christian, you are different because Christ is in you, the hope of glory. You are the called out one. It's not easy, but it is the best way to live. So he says, look, you're the called out ones at Corinth, believers cleaned up by Jesus and set apart for a God-filled life. I love the Message translation. Cleaned up by Jesus. The posh word we use in the church is the word sanctified. And set apart is the word holy in the original. And so he's saying, look, you've been set apart, you've been made holy, you've been called out. God's done that for you for a reason. Let's see why. I include in my greeting all who call out to Jesus wherever they live. He's their master as well as ours. May all the gifts and benefits that come from God our Father and the Master Jesus Christ be yours. And the word in the original there, some translations have it, gifts and benefits is the word grace. You may have heard it, Amazing Grace, the kind of hymn, the song. The word grace actually means gifts, benefits, goodness, kindness, joy, hope. All that stuff that God gives to us. He said, this is all yours. Every time I think of you, and I think of you often, I thank God for your lives of free and open access to God given by Jesus. Let's move on, Jack, would you? There's no end to what has happened in you. It's beyond speech, beyond knowledge. The evidence of Christ has been clearly verified in your lives. Pause. I want you to think, if you're a Christian, is there enough evidence to convict you of being a Christian in your life? If you were put on trial for being a Christian, this person here is a Christian, stand in the dock. Is there enough evidence in your life for people to say, yes, they are a Christian because of this, 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 and this? Or would the judge say, you're free to go because there's no evidence to convict you of being a Christian? You're just like everybody else. It's a tricky one, isn't it? I tell you, we're only in the first few verses of the first chapter. No messing in this. Straight in here. The evidence of Christ has been clearly verified in your lives. Just think, you don't need a thing. You've got it all. All God's gifts, all his grace, right in front of you as you wait expectantly for our Master Jesus to arrive on the scene for the finale. I love the message. So they're waiting for Jesus to come back and sort the world out. When I first became a Christian in my late 20s, I worked in industry. And I can recall even now the moment when I was in with the guys in the restroom having a coffee. And I remember even now this guy, we were chatting about football or something, and this guy said to me, hey, mate, you go to church, don't you? To which I didn't answer. I'd been a Christian maybe a few months. And he said, and I went, yeah, yeah. And so this guy said to me, so are you one of these Christians then? And do you know what? My reaction was one of anger. I kind of went, my answer was this. What an idiot I was. What's it got to do with you? Hey, look at that. I became a vicar. It's really smart. I went, what's he got to do with you? And as soon as I said it, I thought, oh, flip. That was not the right answer. And I had God sort of in my life going, I could sense the Lord saying, have another go. I kind of heard it. I went, what's he going to do with you? And like all the guys went, brother, football. And I went, yeah, I am a Christian. And this guy went, so what does it mean then? I got no idea how to answer him. I went, and I can remember now saying this. I said, well, I believe in Jesus. And when I said it, I thought, oh my goodness, stupid answer to give. They all think I'm a crackpot. I believe in Jesus. And I went, I carried on saying that. My brain's going, stop speaking. And my heart's going, carry on speaking. And I went, I believe in Jesus, and I believe he's the Son of God. We're in a coffee area with a load of engineers. I believe in Jesus, and I believe he's the Son of God. I believe he died for us all. And when I said that, I thought, oh, they're going to hate me forever. And I'm thinking this while I'm speaking these words out. And I had this other voice going, go and answer. That was God, I think. And all the guys looked at me, and this guy went, ah, fair enough. And they carried on talking about football. And I was like, I was in a sweat. And I was all like, oh, dear, did I answer right? And I didn't ever even mention it again, except maybe about 3-4 months later, this guy would ask me the question, ask me something again. He wasn't a Christian, but I can tell you this. He was in church this morning because he became a Christian 11 years later. And part of those conversations I had, my stupid answers, connected with him. And he's not part of this church, he was visiting. And so the evidence of being a Christian is important. So it is important we stay on that line, difficult though it is. And he goes on to say this. Not only that, God himself is right alongside you to keep you steady and on track. And that's what I felt that day. God was at the side of me going, try again. Not the best answer you've ever given. Why not have another go? He was right beside me till all things are wrapped up in Jesus. God who got you started in this spiritual adventure shares with us the life of his son, our Master Jesus. He will never give up on that, and he'll never give up on you. Never forget that. So I would suggest to you, as we bring this into land, that here's another narrative, another story, another picture. It starts with God. The Bible said it always doesn't start with the church. And I'm a Christian minister, and I repent of all us who become the priestly sect with dog collars on or pastors or whatever we are. We've kind of held the church to ourselves, and we've made a right pig's ear of it, where we should release it to you guys and just be there to guide and help. It's nothing to do with being at the front doing this stuff, because it always starts with God and who God is. And then the next thing is you. It's you and me. It's people. God and people equals church. That's it. All our imperfections, all our struggles, all our journeys, I haven't got a clue what these songs are. I don't know where these songs are. I don't understand what they're doing. But something inside resonates, and it's God saying, keep going, press on, keep doing it. It'll make sense one day. I'm on your case. I'm right alongside you. That's the narrative, and that's what we're going to hear over these next months. Now, just to bring this in, just two verses, if I can, before Sam and the band come up. I hear this such a lot. And to be honest with you, when I became a Christian, I thought this. If I become a Christian, if I stick with this church stuff, the Christian stuff, God's going to take things away from me. When I became a Christian, I want to make a lot of money and be successful in industry. That worked out well, didn't it? That worked out really well. Finished up on another track altogether. And actually, sometimes I hear this a lot, but actually, there's things I want to do in my life, and Christianity, the things of Jesus, is going to restrict me. As if like God is this awful person saying, so you're a Christian now. You're going to have such a hard life. I'm going to put you through the mill, and all this good stuff all your mates are doing and all your friends are doing, not for you. You're going to live on bread and water. Never watch Sky TV ever again. Football, forget about it. As if God's going to take all those things away. Again, a final few little notes on surveys that, and you've heard me say this before, and the figures are even worse now, but actually this was done by Fusion, the student movement, that said a few years ago that 1% of students who come to university in their fresher year in the UK have a Christian affiliation. They come from a Christian youth group or whatever. But worryingly, 70% of that 1%, 7 out of 10, in their first year, drop out of church. Why? Because they want to do life. They want to do the things that they really wanted to do, but they couldn't do because they were in the Christian youth group and their parents wouldn't have liked it. So they come to uni and they do the stuff. You know? The stuff that they're not proud of later. But the good thing is that of those who drop out, over 60-odd percent come back, particularly in their second year. Because God is a God who forgives. But more than that, this verse says here in verse 4 in this passage, may all God's gifts be yours. This is what Paul is saying. May all God's gifts be yours. And so all these gifts, all these good gifts, God gives us. He's not the God who takes stuff away from us. He's the God who gives us things. Amazing things. I can't recall the stuff Trish and I have had in our lives from Jesus. I've not made £1 million, I've not made a lot of money, but we've made much more. Joy and hope and happiness in our family, in our children, our grandchildren. The greatest joy is to have led this church and to see young people like you getting on the journey of life, trying to get to grips with this Christian faith and staying with it. It's an incredible joy, and it's a gift that God has given Trisha and me. So thank you for being the gift. You are the gift. And all those who've gone before you in the previous 16, 17 years we've been here. God doesn't take things away from us. He gives us things. Before Sam gets up, watch this little clip on the screen. See, I love this. A guy called Rob Bell. It lasts 1 minute. Just watch this. Bring the lights down, would you? Love that. Across the street. God has something better. And I hope that we can engage with that this year. And while we're doing that, remember this. This is on my desk, over my office desk, this. He will never give up on you. Never forget that. Every day, I have to remind myself that God will never give up on me. Every day, as a leader, as a human being, as a father, as a husband, as a granddad now, I have to believe that God will never give up on me. He's always with me. He will always be there for me. And I still believe it with all my heart. I hope you really, as it comes on here now, that we as a church can be really intentional this year in engaging with Jesus and staying with this faith and blossoming and growing and receiving all the gifts he's got for us.